Hello there, I'm Sandy Toksvig, and welcome to this edition of the News Quiz Extra, where you get all sorts of things you weren't expecting, including me doing an impersonation of Graham Norton. News Quiz Extra is like a bigger show. It's like the loyal Labrador to the News Quiz's daintier Chihuahua. Now, the thing about these larger beasts, they can sometimes be hard to handle, but don't you worry, they're always enjoyable, just as soon as it stops doing that thing to your leg, which is quite unpleasant. Anyway, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Ohio Sentinel read by Corey Caulfield.
Last week we reported that local musician John Henninger's bandmate was on drugs. The story should have read that he was on drums.
And our thanks to Phil Wilson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Phil Jupitus. And opposite them on my left, Ed Byrne and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who's had a Beecroft in his bonnet this week?
Adrian Beecroft?
Yes.
He's a venture capitalist, which is more than a capitalist. I mean, it is venture capitalism. I think it's the capitalism as Yorkshire pudding is to pudding, really. And he was asked by David Cameron to do a report on how companies could improve and hire more people. And the conclusion he came up with was the way to get them hiring more people was to get them sacking people. And this would reduce the unemployment figures at a stroke if companies were free to sack people willy-nilly. I don't know if the words willy-nilly were in his report, but that was the size of it. And Cameron has not adopted this, and it's all because of Vince Cable, because he says Vince Cable is a socialist, and he won't stand for this because he can't bear hurting people's feelings, which is obviously the case with the Lib Dems. I mean, they, you know, if they wanted to hurt people's feelings, they might go into an election making all sorts of promises and then ditch some of them. But luckily, that hasn't happened, so
Do you think Vince should lose his job because he's too socialist or too conservative? It's that old thing, should you cut the red cable or the blue cable?
The only slightly creepy thing about Vince Cable is he does like to be called Dr. Vince Cable. And I always think people with PhDs who want to be called doctor, you think of Dr. Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Dr. Ian Paisley.
Yeah, Colonel Sanders. It's just, yes.
I do think Dr. Cable does sound like a porn star, though.
I saw a piece in the Daily Mail this week saying Vince Cable is unsackable.
Why?
Well, because he's the one that lots of Lib Dems like, all the disgruntled Lib Dem members. So if he's sacked, that will be the end of the coalition and we'll have to have an election. And so he can't be sacked. So he can say Beecroft's bonkers or whatever he wants to say, and Cameron can't do anything about
it. Is that
it.
Why they want
one of the only two members of the cabinet who can't be sacked, the other one being Pickles, obviously, because he's too big to fail.
Want to change the employment law so that they can get rid of Vince Cable.
They keep saying the reason for the recession, the reason people aren't getting hired, is employers are scared of hiring people because they won't be able to fire them. Is that really why? Is it because basically that's what employers would say, because capitalists fundamentally have never really been happy since they were forced to start paying people by Wilberforce. His antics.
It doesn't make sense to me, the idea that we don't want to hire you because it might be very difficult then for us to fire you. Because if they don't hire you, it's completely impossible for them to fire you.
Exactly. Yeah.
They should think of a new way of branding it, that whole thing. So you have like Amusing Hat Tuesday, Casual Thursday, Sack Everybody Friday.
But we do need to have some system for firing underperforming staff more quickly, do we not? Under the current system, it takes Alan Sugar weeks to get rid of those morons. And
the other thing with The Apprentice is that they do seem to misunderstand the meaning of the word fired, in that you can't really fire somebody, again, I say, who you haven't yet hired. You know, it's really, when he says you're fired, the candidate should turn around and go, well, you can't fire me. I don't technically work for you.
But dragons don't have dens, they have lairs. Lions have dens. They don't tell you that on the television, do they? Not on mine, because it doesn't work since Crystal Palace turned off the analogue signal.
Downing Street adviser Adrian Beecroft, who this week published his controversial report on employment law, has called Vince Cable a socialist. Beecroft's report suggested slashing redundancy notice periods, capping payouts, and banning television programmes from having talking points in order to cut down on time wasted at the water cooler. 2 points to Francis. Phil, who may say cheerio to the ASBO?
I think perhaps the hottest Home Secretary that we've had since Willie Whitelaw.
Are you sure you know who is
Home
Secretary?
Very much.
It's not Michael Howard anymore.
No.
No, Jeremy. No, Theresa May, our Home Secretary, she is proposing to do away with the ASBO. She thinks the ASBO is old hat. She thinks it's far too slow to implement. Mm. And she's bringing in criminal behaviour orders, yep, or CRIMBOs, as they become known. So,
but also that they said that this CRIMBO instead of ASBO, it was a case of branding. You think, well, that is serious. It was something going to...
She's implementing something now in order to, she seems to think, streamline the process. If she can get five people to complain about somebody, or one person to complain three times, then the police will swoop into action. It's all about the maths, really. The same woman who got rid of 16,000 coppers, so maths is obviously not her strong point. If you can find a policeman to complain to, I think you deserve to get whatever you want. An ASBO, a Blue Peter badge, a Jim will fix it medal, whatever.
Yeah. She went on Daybreak to announce this major policy on the Daybreak sofa. She said, we're going to introduce a community trigger. Roy Rogers riding around on...
But announcing plans on ITV's Daybreak, I mean, in terms of burying things, it's like putting it in John Redwood's Round Robin Christmas letter. I mean, it's... But what used to happen when you got on ASBO? What was... I mean, I never really knew what they did, which is just as well. I've got eight of them. I know, dear, what...
It's a bit like a Costa Coffee reward card for criminals, where you just collect stamps.
If you've got five disorderly behaviours, you can trade that in for an armed robbery, can't you? You can swap them in the playground.
Well, that was part of the problem, because ASBO actually became a badge of honour. It was rather like, you know, feminist publishers setting up in the 1970s, calling themselves Virago, or gay rights campaigners.
Oh, I remember them. They got
Queer Nation. You know, you actually take these things which are meant to be used against you and turn them back. And people, a lot of people with ASBOs, allegedly, went around swaggering and say, got five ASBOs. And and so she thinks CRIMBO is going to sound less good to both of us. Actually, reduce it to BO, and it'll be even better. Just say, I've got BO. Or SUBO.
But we should have more. We should have bimbos for people committing antisocial acts have to be in the only way is Essex. We should have limbos where criminals and unbaptised children are cast into a speculative state of purgatory. I think we need more.
Surely more fun for them to try and walk underneath a low bar into their cell.
Fantastic.
But the thing is, most of it is just about annoyance. And the thing is, that's entirely subjective. Because what about people in red trousers, eh?
Yeah.
Red trousers, I mean, really. Or people who go to the gym and go, when they're... You think, why did you do that? Why did you do that? I mean, these things are deeply annoying to some people. I hate when people say on a daily basis. You mean every day. Say every day. It's quicker. Don't say on a daily basis. Don't say on a weekly basis. Say weekly. Weekly. One word. Weekly. Don't say the majority of. Say most. It's one word. It's quicker. These things are really annoying. These things should be punishable by death.
I would...
I think people should be issued ASBOs if they use the word literally and then say something figuratively, you know?
I literally died laughing. No, you didn't. You literally don't understand what the word literally means.
Theresa May has announced new plans to tackle antisocial behaviour, which will see the creation of new orders, but the abolition of the ASBO. In its time, the ASBO was used to put a stop to noisy sex, the playing of Glenn Miller records, and the sniffing of petrol on forecourts. Still, what a weekend that was. 2 points to Phil. Ed, who thinks going to prison is a popular move?
Ken Clark.
Yes.
Has said that more people are in prison because of the popular press, because people who work in the popular press keep committing crimes and therefore having to go to prison. I think that's...
That's not quite what he's...
Is that they're clamouring for higher sentences and longer sentences for people, and he is saying that less people should go to prison for the
fewer,
simple
reason... Fewer.
Oh!
You can dish it out, but you can't take it, can you?
I literally condition house could literally go on tape. Yeah, but he said.
Yeah. Come on.
The reason he says it is because it's not very good value for money. Yeah. 45 grand a year to put somebody in prison. I have often said that a good way to make some of that money back would be if we put cameras in the prisons and turn the whole thing into a reality show. Day 419, Night Row is in the workshop making a shiv. I think that would be a winner.
Well, I liked Ken Clark said, we have seen such a surge in the prison population over the last 15 years. It would be really helpful if we could have a bit of a pause in order to address what we can do with the people we've got. So if nobody could commit a crime for the next 3 days, that would be fantastically helpful.
I thought he was treading on rather thin ice because he said, it's a recipe for disaster having a lot of people put in overcrowded conditions, many of them with alcohol problems and have been unable to hold down a job. This is a member of the House of Commons.
But the thing about prisoners as well, the other reason that the prisons are in the news is because the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, David Cameron apparently is going to defy them because they've had this pesky move that they consider voting to be a right and they've classed prisoners as humans. And therefore, they have the right to vote. This blanket thing that no one's allowed to vote if they're in prison apparently has to be lifted. And Cameron and Ed Balls has also come in. Like, there's been a cross-party belief that democracy should be kept out of prisons. Considering the length we've gone to spread democracy to parts of the world that don't even want it, it seems surprising.
But how
which I don't think prisoners should be allowed to vote, to be honest with you, because I think it's bad enough being locked up every day without them also having to feel the sense of disenfranchisement and betrayal that we all have to put up with.
Justice Secretary Ken Clark has blamed an increase in the prison population on tabloid newspapers calling for stiffer sentences. Ooh, those tabloid papers, if only there was some kind of inquiry into their behaviour. 2 points to Ed. Jeremy, listen to this. That piece of music has got everything in it. It's Swedish. It's about phones. Jeremy, who's regretting having dinner with Jeremy?
OK. Paxman was at a dinner party with, and he said it was Philip Green, the Topshop tax dodger, Ulrika Johnson, who, of course, founded the Bader Johnson terror gang with Douglas Bader of the RAF, the Red Army faction, and Piers Morgan, the least impressive of the Bonds, I think. Piers Morgan taught him how to hack phones. And you think, some people's social life is of a different order. I mean, I don't really go to dinner parties. Friends say, do you want to come round for something to eat? And I'll say, that'd be good, it'll save me some money, I will. And I'll go round, and there'll be my friends who invite me, and some of their friends whom I also know. Sometimes they will make you meet new people. You think, oh, why have you... I'm at the end of my life, I don't need to make... tube for 3/4 of an hour. Do you think I want to spend another 4 hours looking at complete strangers? But anyway, they'd be quite interesting because they're friends of friends, so that's quite nice. And they might have a job that ordinary people do, which is always fascinating. But point is, that's the sort of dinner party I go to. Paxman, it's different. You don't even know the host. You turn up, you're not sure it's the right address. It's only you invited, no partners. You knock at a door and it's opened by Lurch from the Adams family. And you're shown into the drawing room for pre-dinner drinks where you meet the host who says, ah, Mr. Paxman, we've been following your career with interest for some time. And you look around the room and it's basically Lulu and the Bilderberg group. And that's the kind of party he goes to. So now Paxman can hack phones, which is a useful skill to have.
Do you think maybe it was the wrong... You know, you're always saying that people confuse Jeremy's, that they didn't mean to invite Jeremy Paxman. They thought it was Clarkson that was coming. Yeah. 8 weeks now, we've been trying to get Jeremy Hunt on this programme. We've ended up with Hardy. I'm just saying, it's...
But it's very good because, you know, we've got all these things this summer, like the Jubilee and the Olympics and all these other causes for celebration. And then at the end of the year, Piers Morgan going to jail, that would bring the whole nation together. Street parties in every village up in our land.
But honestly, a lunch with Paxman and Morgan and Ulrika Johnson, it's like the worst possible game of shag, marry, kill that you could imagine. Anybody know why it's been a tricky couple of days for Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt?
Well, Leveson again, yeah. And his chap Adam,
and that French Michael, the French fella.
And Michel.
Michel. He's saying, when I put JH in my texts and my many emails, I mean just the office of Jeremy Hunt. I do not mean the man personally. That would be crazy. 769 text messages to Jeremy Hunt. What am I, in love with him?
I did like Jeremy Hunt's memo opened with the words, James Murdoch is pretty furious. And I thought, oh, we'll give it 5 minutes. He'll have completely forgotten. It'll be fine. This week, Jeremy Paxman told the Leveson Inquiry that Piers Morgan showed him how to hack voicemail messages at a dinner party. Piers Morgan was available for comment, but nobody could bear the thought of having to talk to him. 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Phil have got 4 points, but so too have Ed and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Diocese of Calverston Church Bulletin.
Scouts are saving aluminium cans, bottles and other items to be recycled. Proceeds will be used to help cripple children.
And our thanks to Leo Holmes for sending us that. Francis, who has been making their mind up over what to do with their Baku Banga Bang ambassador?
Oh, it's Eurovision weekend.
Making their mind up.
Yeah, this very weekend. It's in Azerbaijan, which is one of the less savoury regimes. I was about to say in Europe, but it's not even really in Europe, is it? All these countries turn up in the Eurovision Song Contest. Israel, Azerbaijan, Colombia. And then everyone is too polite to say, I don't think you're really in Europe, within the meaning of the word. There have been quite a lot of calls for a boycott because Azerbaijan is so horrible. But Britain has decided to express its displeasure even more vehemently by inflicting Engelbert Humperdinck on them. Most of us would think that Azerbaijan is a pretty oppressive place, but it's not oppressive enough for Iranian tastes.
No.
And so Iran has withdrawn its ambassador in protest. And some Ayatollah was quoted saying, they are having this Eurovision Song Contest, which I'm reliably informed is a gay parade. I think they've just caught up with the news that Terry Wogan's been replaced by Graham Norton, probably.
Upset the Iranians, should they not just go whole hog and have Bucks Fizz recreate that dance where they tore off their skirts, but this time do it in burqas? I think it'd be just...
You've sent Engelbert Humperdinck, we're sending Jedward.
I don't know what you're looking at me for. I haven't sent anybody.
She's Danish anyway.
Who are the plucky Danes sending then, Sandy?
I sadly have not paid any attention at all. Denmark withdrew from the Eurovision Song Contest in 1967 for 10 years, claiming it wasn't producing quality entertainment. Because, as you know, in Denmark, quality entertainment is a miserable woman in a jumper staring at a corpse.
Are you allowed to send identical twins? That seems like...
Well, we just want to send them anywhere that sounds even vaguely oppressive. It's part of our plan to send them to increasingly more oppressive regimes every chance we get.
When Engelbert Humperdinck was on Desert Island Discs, he chose his own autobiography as his book. And my guess is that he hadn't read it.
No, it's true. Katie Price wrote that.
Iran has recalled its ambassador to Azerbaijan over what it has declared anti-Islamic behaviour surrounding the Eurovision Song Contest. Homes in the Azerbaijani capital of Baku have been demolished to make way for the Eurovision venue. Apparently this was done by supplying the Irish entry Jedward with too many E numbers and a hammer. 2 points to Francis. Phil, why are we more likely to be legless at sea?
Because the euro is decreasing in value against the pound, it means you get more for your euros, and so the very popular booze cruises are to return. They think that the booze cruises will come back because there's such a favourable rate, even though I think that if people are going to pile onto ferries in massive, sweaty, needy numbers and go to spend their money in France, when our own country is suffering a massive financial crisis, they should be called fiscal irony cruises from now.
I went on a booze cruise once, never again. I left Copenhagen Harbour. To be honest, it all got a bit blurry. And the next thing I knew, I was a presenter of a topical quiz in Britain. I don't...
If we left the euro, we could buy weird drinks in duty free again, couldn't we? Yeah. Do you remember when you were desperate and you'd say, oh, there's nothing, people would have come back to the house because pubs used to close at sort of 7:30 in the evening and didn't serve alcohol anyway.
Yeah.
And you'd be all desperate for a drink and you'd say, oh, I think we've got some duty free, and there'd be some weird thing from Cyprus made from avocados and eggs, liver and wood alcohol. And it tasted marvellous when you were on holiday, when you were sunstruck.
You got a Spanish ham-based liqueur.
Actually, I know somebody who got very ill going to France and buying loads of miniatures. Mind you, if you will, drink perfume.
Don't you make jokes about miniatures, Sandra.
Sorry, no, it's not a good idea.
Pots and kettles.
Sandy at Christmas, what she does is she drills holes in liqueur chocolates. Gets a straw. She's a borrower, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's fair, it's fair. Thanks to the economic crisis, the booze cruise is making a comeback. The crumbling euro is making it more economical to travel to the continent for alcohol. However, green fuel bills may mean travelling there becomes more expensive. And there is a suggestion that the only way to get cheap alcohol from the continent is to strap it to the back of David Walliams. 2 points to Phil. Ed, listen to this. Ed, who has boldly gone and charged NASA an absolute fortune?
This is actually very exciting.
Mm.
The first commercial flight into space to the International Space Station carried out by a private company has taken off. You don't think of space exploration as something that gets outsourced.
No.
But NASA have outsourced it, and so a company called SpaceX have taken a rocket called Falcon 9, and the docking module is called the Dragon, because this is what happens when you let nerds name stuff. And Obama's chief science advisor has said the whole thing is very exciting. And this is what he said. He says that it frees NASA up to concentrate on the things NASA's good at, which is working out technological problems. Which I'm just thinking how many people who work at NASA are saying to themselves, oh, I'm so glad now we've freed up our times to do hard sums and somebody else is doing all that humdrum boring stuff like leaving the planet. Which is obviously not what I joined NASA to do.
Each flight costs £63 million.
That's without tip.
Yeah. It's being run by Southwest Trains, I think.
It's quite outstanding when you think that... I mean, if somebody had told me, like, in 1997, that in the next 15 years, you'd have a device no bigger than a pack of cards that holds your entire record collection, you'd be able to watch 3D movies on a screen that doesn't require special glasses, and private companies will be flying to the International Space Station. And not only that, but all of these things will happen before the first time you get asked to do the news quiz on Radio 4.
Why people make such a fuss about rocket science? It's not brain surgery, is it?
No. SpaceX, the first private company to launch a mission into space, has put its Dragon rocket into orbit. The rocket was funded by billionaire Elon Musk, who made much of his fortune from the online payment system PayPal. The launch was delayed after technicians had to confirm the launch, reconfirm the launch, and type a random series of numbers and letters into a text box. NASA is looking for new commercial cargo providers to deliver their payloads to space after the Royal Mail lost 3 astronauts in a sorting office in East Cheam. 2 points to Ed. Jeremy, how did the Oval Office help make great box office?
OK. President Obama has allowed Kathryn Bigelow, the film director, and her chums access to lots of highly secret stuff about the assassination of Bin Laden. Now, people will know Bigelow because she made the highly praised but nonetheless appalling film Footlocker, which was all about bomb disposal. It's about how selflessly brave and plucky American bomb disposal experts go to the blighted country of Iraq, put on a Mr. Blobby outfit, and get rid of explosive devices. And it's very, very shallow film because it's from the American point of view, like all American war films. If they made a film about the War of the Roses, it would be from the American point of view. Although I suppose they were actually in this war, having started it. But all the characters are... I mean, this annoys me, this film, so much. I know it's a tangent. But the fact is that basically the Iraqis are about as convincing as Bernard Breslau in Carry On, Follow That Camel. They're just the non-white people filling up the screen while the white man does his heroics in the foreground. Anyway, that's Eva Bigelow. She wanted to make a film about Bin Laden, which works out quite well for Obama because he's trying to get re-elected. And when he was elected 4 years ago, some of us were quite euphoric about it. But he hasn't been allowed to do anything, which is not entirely his fault. All he's been allowed to do is kill lots of people, Obama. So, of course, he whacked Bin Laden. And Americans were euphoric, and because it's not to prevent terrorism, it's about revenge. But I contend that revenge is basically quite hollow. And Burt Reynolds told me a story once, a big name drop there, boys and girls. Burt Reynolds, I happen to work with, is a marvellous man, full of brilliant anecdotes. He makes Barry Cryer seem taciturn. And he told me a story about him and Clint Eastwood. They'd both been offended by a director in TV in the 50s in America who'd said, Reynolds, you're ugly, and Eastwood, you can't act. And this man's death came to pass, and Clint and Burt, in revenge, went to the graveside of this man, drank a great deal of water, and then experienced what they hoped would be closure over the grave. And when they had relieved themselves, Clint turned to Burt and said, kind of unsatisfying, isn't it? And that's the nature of revenge. Kind of unsatisfying.
What were you doing with Burt?
Doesn't matter.
Cocaine and whores.
Oh, right.
I know it's a different show, but I was tempted to go, digression? I'm glad to hear that you think that way about the Hurt Locker, because
so
I thought
boring.
The Hurt Locker was absolute pants.
Yeah. It really was.
But completely devoid of any story, any
character.
Oh, no,
there
character.
Was a story.
There was
because,
a story.
No, the story was the one who's an adrenaline junkie, it turns out, is still an adrenaline junkie at the end of the film. That's the story.
That has the same level of plot development as the average computer game.
Yeah.
But people say, it's so realistic. Film. Yes, it's really realistic the way that man defused that many bombs in that short career and violated the chain of command that many times without getting court-martialed and even broke into his own base without getting shot. It stinks of realism.
People say that's realistic and think, oh, right, and you know that because you've been to Iraq and helped dismantle bombs? What? How do you...
I know that because my wife and I went to the same NCT class as a man who's a bomb disposal person.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you know, not only how to deliver a child, but how to safely defuse it.
The Pakistani doctor who helped the CIA hunt for Osama bin Laden has been arrested.
Yes, for treason, no less, because he grasped him up.
I mean,
you can't really blame Obama, because as you say, I mean, he's done pretty much nothing else. And obviously he wants Hollywood to make a movie about it, because that's his legacy, such as it is. And at least he's got that. I mean, Cameron, I was trying to think when I read these things, you know, what film can Cameron make in the run-up to the next election?
Jeeves and Worcester.
It's going to be... Well,
I say, Osborne, have you sorted out that belly economy yet?
No, sir, sadly not.
Barack Obama has been accused of risking America's national security by providing a Hollywood director with secret information surrounding the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. The film was going to be released just before the election, making it the longest American party political broadcast since Fox News. It has now been delayed till December, partly because it'll be after the presidential election and partly because the story of a bearded man hiding has been the plot of so many great Christmas films. 2 points to Jeremy. And at the end of round two, the scores are Francis and Phil have got 8 points, but so too have Ed and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Wickham Advertiser.
For sale, china cabinet, hutch, solid pine with lighted windows, a few cat scratches, but cat has been killed.
Thanks to Jacob Williams for sending us that. Francis, who's hoping online buyers will get them while they're hot?
Is this the Olympic torch?
It is, yes.
Well, it's just a bit of an illusion shattered, because all this talk about the Olympic torch being lit in Athens and brought back by David Beckham on a first-class seat and then processing around the country, I thought it was a torch, the Olympic torch. But it turns out there are 8,000 of the things, and people pick them up, run for 300 yards, and then put them straight on eBay and sell them. But there's been a lot of harumphing about it, people saying this is betraying the Olympic spirit, introducing a commercial element, which is pretty rich. given that in the very same week, LOCOG, the London Sebastian co-outfit, has teams of lawyers on call round the clock now, threatening anyone who uses the words London, 2012 Olympics in any context. There are all these sort of little places that have been around 50 years called the Olympic Cafe, and they've been closed down by the goon squad from LOCOG. And there was a circus in Brighton, I think, this week, which had five women who appear in hoops, acrobats, and they got threatening letters saying, five hoops, that's the Olympic symbol, you can't be in hoops if you're not an official sponsor, otherwise we'll sue you.
Can you eat a bowl of Cheerios?
I thought there was the actual flame that went all the way around, and apparently there's a van that follows the torch around the country with the mother flame inside. Torch is blown out. How nice to know, as one of the torchbearers, how utterly irrelevant you are. I thought the whole... Why would you buy one on eBay unless you fancy a bit of bling in your lynch mob? What is the... Why would you want one?
Well, maybe the local scientist who lives in your village has been experimenting with bits of dead bodies and has finally created life. And you and your friends need some torches in order to chase the creature from the village. And you can't buy them at B&Q. I've tried.
And also, a lot of the torches have costumes that go with them, the little Olympic outfit that the runners get. So you could dress up the monster in the outfit and then torch it.
And then torch it. They're not red, white and blue even, aren't they, the frocks that they're wearing? What do you call it? What do you call a costume for a person who's going to run?
A frock.
It's a frock. I'm so profoundly not interested.
I liked when people just had daps, didn't
they? A singlet! You see that thing?
If you forget your national costume, do you have to do the 100 metres in your pants?
See, I really like the word singlet.
Singlet, it's not singlet, you daft foreigner with weird emphasis.
All right, is it? Lulu is a singlet, small woman who sings.
So what's it called, a singlet?
Singlet.
A singlet. See, I like this very much, because I was walking through Wandsworth Park the other day and there was a lot of men with no shirts on, and I was thinking I'd have a little card printed that just said, have you thought of a singlet? The very first man who won the gold medal for tennis in the Olympics in 1896 was a British man who was on holiday in Athens. And the British had forgotten to send somebody for the tennis, and he won in his brogues. And, I mean, I presume he had trousers on as well, but he had...
Did he really win, or was it just in those days and him being British, he just went, I think you'll find I'm British and I'm somewhere else and that's mine.
he won.
Is that gold? Give it to me, peasant.
Lord Elgin, I've seen something over here.
Some of the Olympic torch relay bearers have already put their torches up for sale on eBay. Many have criticised the sellers' naked profiteering, say it's not in keeping with the spirit of the Coca-Cola EDF London 2012 Olympics. Over 69 days, the relay will take the torch up through England to Scotland, over to Northern Ireland, before coming back to London, where for the last few days, relay runners will be working from home due to high demand on the underground. 2 points to Francis. Phil, listen to this. Phil, who is barking mad for a potter?
Thank God, I thought you were going to ask me who let the dogs out. the Queen has named one of her new... Is it a spaniel? Is it a gun dog of some sort?
I think
sort?
It's a gun dog of some
a
kind.
A gun dog?
It's a cocker. Yeah. That was a really alarming thing. It said the Queen is, has had a long love affair with dogs and is currently breeding with cocker spaniels.
Do you know that IVF thing is getting ridiculous?
86, I think, is to be admired.
What's that in dog ears?
Oh, no.
They need some dog genes. Get something from outside the family. Widen their gene pool.
So, got a new cock spaniel. She's called it Gryffindor after Harry Potter's house. Mm. So, this...
But did you know that the Queen has 100 dogs? What do you do with 100 dogs? I mean,
well,
make
you
more
have
dogs.
A really big sled.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be great if she arrived at the opening of Parliament in a carriage pulled by the dogs?
I'm telling you now, Saturday night, she has dog Eurovision. She dresses dogs in the national costume of every country and then sits them next to the telly but turns the brightness down and then feeds the dogs salt so they go... and it looks like the dogs are singing. And then... Then Prince Philip sits there, dressed as Simon Cowell, and he goes, terrible.
They get 100 dogs and they put them in a room that's only just barely big enough to hold them all, so they're already squashed up, and then they throw little balls into the floor so they're all moving around, and then her and Prince Philip just surf on them.
Lots of the dogs are gun dogs. And you think, well, surely that is what happens if you let Prince Philip have weapons. The animals have got to defend themselves.
Didn't Prince William say that he's not having corgis, he's getting rid of them.
He's getting
They're
rid
too
of them.
Noisy.
No, he didn't say that. He said they're barking all the time. This is from the son of Prince Charles.
The Queen has 100 dogs and has drawn inspiration from the Harry Potter books to name some of them. J.K. Rowling was flattered by the news, saying, "It's an honour that a woman of such wealth, grace and standing should have inspired some old lady to name her dog." I had 2 points to fill. Ed, who is going to be busy catching their flies in the toilet?
George Michael?
12 points.
Is this the Chinese?
It is the Chinese.
They've implemented new rules. Apparently the toilets in Beijing are shockingly bad. And they have various rules now on what constitutes like a toilet that's fallen below a certain standard. And one of them is that if there's any more than two flies buzzing around, then it's failed. So they're basically adopting a similar policy to my local shop has towards school children. Although with flies, it's a lot harder because school children can at least read a sign that says no more than two allowed in the shop at once. Whereas flies, despite the compound eye, they can see a sign, detect if it moves, but they can't read it. And so this is what they're doing, because apparently the toilets in Beijing are quite filthy. Although at least they don't charge people 40p a throw to use them. So I think that says something. Although that would be highly inconvenient. It's bad enough for me if I wanted to use a toilet and it cost me 40p. But in China, for it to cost you 40p, that would be... You've got to find a bureau de change then as well. But they're not even sure, like, what penalties is going to be for, you know, a breaking of the two-fly policy. Although, if the enforcement of the one-child policy is anything to go by, I reckon they'll be pretty serious about it.
I don't know how it's going to work, though, because I think the two flies per stall is fine for the gents, but, I mean, the ladies is going to end up with a whole queue of girl flies outside the ladies.
Because I was in Singapore, and their toilets are incredibly clean.
That's a very clean place.
Incredibly clean place. And they had a rule there, which they've now done away with because now the toilets flush automatically. But it used to be that if you used a public lavatory in Singapore and you left it unflushed, you were punished by... They would take your photograph and print it in the newspaper.
Well, like it's a theme park, you've done the log flume.
I've had some bowel movements that I've been incredibly proud of. If I could have my photograph taken with them, I'd be quite happy to print it in the paper.
The Beijing Municipal Commission of City Administration and Environment have issued new directives for public lavatories stating they should contain no more than two flies. This is just one of a whole set of guidelines for Beijing's public lavatories, which states toilets must have no more than two pieces of rubbish on the floor, have better disabled access, and have at least one copy of Chairman Mao's little red toilet book. 2 points to Ed. Jeremy, why aren't husbands fed up with their wives?
Well, apparently men eat healthily at home and then sneak out and eat bad things. And women think their husbands are having affairs. You've taken a very long time at Sainsbury's, and what they don't know, he's in the car park, in the car, on his own, eating pork pies. And the thing is, it's a squalid, lonely way to eat a pork pie. It's not romantic. A pork pie should be on a plate with a pint of bitter next to it and then some nice chutney and a completely superfluous spring onion there as a serving suggestion. That's how you should eat a pork pie. But basically, all human beings have an emotional and dishonest relationship with food. Women have a dishonest relationship with food because they think it doesn't count if you're standing up after 10 o'clock eating food straight from the fridge without using your hands. Then it doesn't count. It doesn't count if you order the thing you don't want, the sea bass cooked in its own indifference, and you egg your partner on to order the steak, and then we can share. It doesn't count. Pudding doesn't count if it's banoffee pie and two spoons ordered in your partner's name. It doesn't count. And men have a dishonest relationship with food because we pretend we don't like healthy food because it's unmanly. and we sort of have to go through this pantomime. Cool, bloody hell, we're looking for a decent feed. I tell you what, at home, it's all rabbit food, I tell you what. And what will you have? Oh, I'll have the salad niçoise. People say, salad niçoise? Don't give him salad niçoise. Give him the buttered pig gonads and beans. He doesn't want that. He's a man. He doesn't want that. So we all have this completely dishonest emotional relationship with food, I think.
So this is what men do is another thing, is they take the dog out for a walk and actually they're going and getting fast food. And this is a phenomenon known as hot dogging.
Is this what heterosexual married life is like? Men parading in front of their wives, ostentatiously eating celery and sipping filtered water and then popping
yes,
out.
Yes, Sandy, that's exactly what it's like.
He might sound disgusting to you, but we're people too.
The Telegraph this week had one of the most sexist headlines I've ever seen. Women's waists grow as household chores get easier.
But surely the staff handle the household chores.
A new study has found men eat healthily at home to appease their wives but love to eat junk food when away from their wives. The report suggests women talk to their husbands tactfully about eating healthily, taking the old-fashioned view that marriage is a union between one man and one dietitian. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
This is what passes for news in Scotland. Quite a big story from the Aberdeen Evening Express. Aberdeen woman gave up alcohol for a month.
Mr. Jupiters.
Thank you very much. So Steve Ford of Colchester in Essex, who sent in this clip from the website Spiegel International Online. Cheating is becoming an increasing problem in sport events for athletes with disabilities. Rigorous inspections are supposed to root out those who are only faking a handicap, but some imposters still get through, like the supposedly blind athlete who cheered when she saw her result on the board.
Mr. Byrne.
Seen apparently in a music shop, pinned up on the notice board. Death and grindcore guitarist influences Cannibal Corpse, Morbid Angel, and Entombed. Email fluffybunnies@hotmail.co.uk.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Gerardo Guerra of Houston, Texas, and it's from the Citrus County Chronicle. This is in regard to the boil water notice for the city of Inverness. I boiled the water as instructed before I drank it, and then I had to be rushed to the emergency room for a scalded throat and blistered tongue. There should be more cautionary notices regarding this.
Let's take a look at the final score. Ed and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners, because we're so delighted that Francis is back, are Francis and Phil with 13. Before we leave you, here is a headline sent in by Margaret Dowes from the Just Four Airlines newsletter.
Female pilot tosses passenger off for making sexist remarks.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Francis Ween, Phil Jupiter, Seth Byrne and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chair script was written by Simon Littlefield, Gareth Gwynne and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Juliet Myers and Tom Neenan. The producer was Lindsay Fenner. More from the